blah.
All right. Ooh, getting a little crunkier.
Burnt up
in the studio. Welcome to the Interracial Drum Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined by
very white guy.
And he is very white indeed. This super is a super special episode, the most special yet. Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips is on the line. What is going on, Karen?
How are y'all doing today?
Oh my gosh, we are so excited.
Much better now.
So excited. You don't even know. I can't even believe it. It's like a dream come true.
I was going to say dream come true. I was going to say you took the words out of
really,
my mouth.
It really is a dream come true. So we are so happy to have you here. And for our loyal listeners, you will notice there was a change of our opening song in honor of my sister, whose birthday was this past weekend.
She turned
for her. But one of my older sisters, one of my many older sisters. And
Jiminy.
Went to Brooklyn, where I'm from, Karen. And my sister took us to a Jamaican club.
The spot.
And we turned
the spot.
Up. Oh, my
for
gosh.
For real? I'm going to say this. The only thing I'll say about you specifically in this, I'll just leave it out there without, you know, qualification or ever over, more explanation. I'm just going to say I have never been at a bar where somebody drank them out of shit. You drank them out of Southern Comfort. They're like, ooh, that's your last one. You drank them out of Southern Comfort.
It wasn't a full bottle. You see how he does me, Karen?
It was. Wow. That's how it wasn't a full bottle.
It didn't
okay.
It started off full. Okay. That's my point when they okay. started pouring.
Good for
oh,
you.
Oh, my goodness. If you're unfamiliar, our awesome guest today is 10-star Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast, which she does with her wonderful husband, Rod. And she's just the queen of the podcast. So we are so excited to have her here and just excited. What you been up to, Karen? How was your
not,
day today?
Not enough, but you didn't say where people can find the John or any of our little calls.
I will do that after I'm done introducing
really?
Karen. Okay. Thank you for interrupting
That's a heck
me.
Of a cold open.
Per
I got
usual.
You. Per usual. All right. Let's get to it.
Lord. Karen, you see what I have to deal with? Oh, my gosh. So how was your day today, there, Karen? You were at work today?
Yes. My day today was good. And it's so beautiful down here. The weather is so wonderful.
I heard some bugs were bothering you.
Yes, and I don't know what happened, but they, I don't know if it's my chocolate blood, chocolate skin, if I'm sweet smelling, but they was just liking me.
Do you eat bananas? Someone told me that bananas attract mosquitoes.
I love bananas.
I eat a lot of bananas and I get bitten too. I don't know if it's true though.
Somebody did tell us that.
Yeah,
they
that guy's
swore.
An idiot. That guy's
they,
an idiot.
But they swore as soon as they stopped eating bananas, they've never gotten a bug bite since then ever. That's what they said. I don't think it's worth giving up bananas, though. That's just me.
Need the potassium.
Exactly. Bananas are good in everything. They're good for breakfast, desserts, all sorts of things. No. I'll keep the bananas. Thank you very much. And just keep my off handy.
Right.
If you are joining us for the first time, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's JAWN. You can also find us on our website, interracialjohn.com. And, of course, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. Again, that's JAWN. So this has been a really amazing couple of weeks for Drew, Karen, because this is week two in a 3-week series of awesome black women coming on the show. So he's had two black women on the show with him.
I approve.
So he's excited. He's very excited. And besides our sojourn to turn up in Brooklyn, which we really did turn up. It was like,
it was crazy. And I hate, and I shouldn't use it because I've been trying to be better with my ableist language. I shouldn't be crazy. It was amazing. It was the most, we went till 4 in the morning and then went and got pancakes.
I had a waffle.
At like 4 a.m. The place was just, It was good. It was really good.
Because when I was younger, I could do that. Now,
This is like I take a nap. Once in a year.
Say, yeah, that's the only way you're going to have me up that early. I've got to take a nap.
Now, we had this on the schedule with my sisters and I like 3 months ago. I was like, okay, this day, May 9th, I can fit in one night to really turn up with you guys. And it was like, okay. So we were all ready, prepared. Because otherwise, and then because it takes a day to recover from the ridiculousness.
Oh my God, I was hungover. I really was.
For sure.
I didn't even drink, just up that late. I was hungover.
Yes.
And I remember we didn't, I think we talked about it on the show yet, but so all night, and it's in Brooklyn, and it's a reggae spot, and they got music bland, and they've got their own little bar and whatever. And I don't know why, but there were two police officers. First, a police car, and then two patrol officers stationed out front all night long. And they were like, pleasant. They're like, hey, how you doing? And so one of my nephews was smoking trees, was getting high, and walked outside right past the cops and did this like multiple times and like reached like dude, you just smoked a doobie.
Why are you narking on my nephews?
You know which nephew, but so anyway, he says he's walking past, and the one cop says, hey, listen, I'm not gonna harassed you, and I just really want to ask a question, just genuinely, like, why are you walking outside, and like, what did he say, flaunting it, is that what he said?
Yeah, he's like, why don't you go behind closed doors in your home or wherever, why,
now so we that, have to get involved or
so,
something
so
like
we
that.
Don't have to get involved, because I'm not judging, to each his own. It's not, this is the cops talking, it's not a big deal, I'm not judging, it's no judgment here. I just want to know, because then you have your rights and I don't have to get involved, and I'm not put in a position to have to say something or do something about it, right. why don't you do that. The cop was basically like I don't understand.
And what was his answer? Because I don't give a fuck.
Well, he was drunk though, so yeah. I mean, nobody was driving. He was fine. The cops were fine too. It was fine.
I just thought that, because it wasn't. Was there 50 people there? Half of them were our family and friends. Maybe 70 people there.
Yeah,
and
maybe
a third
70 or so,
were our family and friends. And it didn't seem like a big deal. But I was like, man, that's just sort of like kind of like a killjoy a little bit. Like even. At the spot where we're trying to have fun and relax. And
it's
know.
Old people too, Karen. But this is the thing. It's like, that's the way you see supremacy. See, like, that they needed to be outside this club with, like,
yeah,
the median age was, like, 53. Like, I'm not even joking. It's not one of those. It's like the little neighborhood spot that, like, you take your girlfriend to when you're an older guy. You want to have a beer and dance, inappropriately in public. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't. There's no need for police.
No,
to be
there was there
of it.
Wasn't anything even close to anger or aggression all night long.
They were
nothing.
All old people.
Yeah, what problems did they think they was gonna have? A wheelchair?
I don't know.
I mean, these people old. Like,
yes, we were the young people. I'll put it that way. I'm not joking.
There was a couple of like
just on my nephews, but they were there because it was their mother's birthday.
Other than that,
it was old people.
Remember, so we got there at like. Close to midnight, and it was empty. And then there was a wave of people that came in at like 1:30. The young people came in at like 2:30.
But they left.
Yeah.
They were like, this is boring. And they walked out. That's how bad it was. So,
old folks.
Yes, it was an old folks-like spot, and there's no need for the police.
But Karen, she had that song. My sister-in-law's name is Karen as well.
Yes.
Played for her birthday, and she was in the center of the dance
floor.
No,
Drew, that's like a Jamaican birthday, like, tradition.
Okay.
Have you never heard it before?
I have, but it's only like 4 or 5 years old. I don't know if you'd call it a tradition.
No, it's way older than that.
I don't think so.
It is.
Okay.
They play it everywhere, at every Jamaican birthday party, celebration.
She was in the middle doing her thing.
That's what you do. You put them in the middle and everybody tells them how blessed they are. It's fantastic.
She did it twice.
The DJ did it twice. He started the song over, Karen, which is another Jamaican thing. I don't know why, but... The song was good, so he said, let's play it again, I guess. Oh, my goodness. What else did you want to talk about? About the thirsty dudes in Brooklyn?
Oh, just, it was you, first of all. I don't mind. I'm the only white guy there. Doesn't bother me at all, but I'm still, like, your husband. And, like, I'm trying to, like, keep an eye out. And there was definitely, like... thirsty dudes in their own natural environment. I hadn't seen that in a while, like at a bar. And you were just like, fuck off, get out of here. She's got somebody. She's with my nephew, like blah, 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 blah. Like you shut this one guy down like two or if a third time had to happen, I think something would have been
because you
unfortunate
know what it is? Because dudes suck and well, they're very forward if they think there's a single woman there. You know what I'm talking about, Karen? Like where you're at a bar and it's like they don't
it don't even matter if you're married. It
no.
matter.
They don't care and it's like it's infringing on our fun. We were there as a family. It was literally all my family and very, very close friends. So it was just like, dude, you see what's going on here? We have like a table with a cake. We don't need you trying to bump and grind on my nephew's girlfriend. Like, seriously.
It was a little much. Back your shit up. But you honestly, I was like, oh, she's going to cash a check. I'm going to have to chew or something. Like,
nah, man. I got them dudes. Those dudes weren't going to do nothing. They were at that club. What were they going to really do?
And there was one the last time with regards to your nephew's girlfriend. I got up. I got
I
up.
Saw
and,
you
and
stand
Laz,
up.
And Laz grabbed my arm. He's like, no.
Like, no.
She got
no.
it. She got
you,
it.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Well, God bless you, Laz, because nobody needed your involvement in there, Drew. I had that on lock. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about this news.
The news is coming on. Where's my thing?
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
So I know, Karen, that you guys already talked about this TNT school founder and her look who's leaving all of the black people on your show.
Yes.
But this bitch has continued to run her mouth, which is getting just way beyond at this point. Like, I don't know why she continues to talk, but
that's the double down.
Well, no, her first statement said the devil made her do it and she apologized. The devil was in the house and it came out her mouth, she said. Apparently, I don't know how that works, but okay.
In my house, the devil leaves the seat up on the toilet all the fucking time. I don't know. I'm not saying. Even plus the pee dribbles. Devil.
Devil?
Devil pee.
What's the devil doing up in your place, Karen? What kind of mischief's going on over there?
I don't like him around me because whenever he shows up, problems happen. Racism, for some reason, comes out. Sexism comes out. Homophobic comes out. Stay away from me.
Stay away. Stay away. But she's taking her remarks further to clarify because her blaming this on the devil and then apologizing wasn't enough. So let's just hear her new explanation.
The triple down.
Let's see.
My side is I'm not a racist.
Of course not.
I didn't know black people was a racist term. I didn't say the N-word or anything like that because that's not in my vocabulary. What happened was at graduation, the valedictorian was introduced to give his speech, and a man who just happened to be black came up in front of us. In front of the podium and was going back and forth doing selfies with the kids and interrupting the valedictorian. Therefore, disrespect to that student. And then when I called security in, I asked the man to please sit down. He did not. He just continued. I called security.
I'm going to stop there for just a second. Who the hell? It was in a church. What security you needed this church? That you're holding a graduation. Didn't even look like 100 people were graduating.
And didn't she say the valedictorian was trying to speak? And didn't she already, like, incorrectly dismiss everybody? So, like, if the valedictorian's up there speaking, like, it's not disrespect to the valedictorian. Like, you failed. You said, like, okay, goodbye, everybody. And he starts taking selfies. The fuck?
Oh, my God. I can't. All right. Let's see. Finish this out.
When they came in, the audience booed. And, of course, it's going to be young kids because they were getting a kick out of this guy.
Oh, they booed. You mean you calling the security cash in the middle of their graduation day? Surprise.
Would they want to cheer?
What the?
Hip,
question, y'all. So she dismissed the ceremony. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, hold up. I didn't mean to dismiss it.
Yes.
Okay.
Everything from then on is on her.
Everything should be like, I'm so sorry. It's my fault. Nope.
And being disrespectful. And I said, you're being rude and disrespectful to this young man. And when I looked left, okay, the light, as you know, lights in an auditorium, you look left, all I saw were black people getting up and leaving. And I said, oh, look who's leaving, all the black people. So I made a statement. It wasn't a racist remark. Anybody that knows me knows my heart is with these kids. I've been teaching 30-something years. I've had TNT for 15. And I apologized to my families and my kids and their graduation. I'm sorry it ended up like that, and I apologize, and we'll continue on with whatever work. And the board is getting together to see what we need to do. And, you know, that's really all I have to say. People that know me know the truth.
Well, I mean, you've seen the piece of tape, I suspect.
Yeah.
And there was a sort of a dramatic reaction in the room when you made that statement.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond to that?
People always think the worst, you know, that, oh, you say the word black, you know. Was I supposed to say African-American? Were they all born in Africa?
Oh, no.
No, they're Americans.
Americans.
And they live here. And but just, I'm not a racist. People that know me, I've worked, you know, with disadvantaged kids like this that couldn't get through school. We
like
helped
this.
Them get a high school diploma. And we've been doing it for 15 years. And our heart's in it. We're not against anyone, and I've never disrespected anyone.
You know what her whole statement was?
Yes, blah, 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 blah. Thank you.
There's nothing there at all. Goodbye.
Were they talking to her on the side of 77?
Yes. I heard the cars just going right by. That's the best she could offer them as far as a venue is concerned.
This was Georgia, right?
Yes, this is and just outside of Stone
maybe
Mountain,
Karen's
Georgia.
Better to answer this. Is it her regional dialect, or am I crazy, or was she putting some emphasis on, like, black people? Like, she had some weird, she was punctuating things. I don't know why.
I think it was more her punctuating things. And the whole thing about this quote-unquote apology, is that an apology?
Non-apology.
No, it's a no-apology.
Right.
An un-apology.
Yeah, not at any time did she say. She said she apologized to her family. She but not at one time did you apologize to, like, the students, the blacks that you was talking about. I didn't hear you apologize to them people either, as she called them. And it's very insulting because you teach and you've taught for a very long time. And just because, and the thing about it, what I've realized is that people can do subtle things in their psyche that they don't realize this racist to other people.
Right.
Because people live in their bubbles. And when you live in bubbles, you have a tendency to be around people that think like you, act like you, have the same philosophy as you do.
Yeah.
It's not until you get older and you begin to branch out that you realize people have different philosophies. You deal with people that are religious, non-religious, you know, all different types of backgrounds and things like that, mm-hmm. that you begin to expand how you think. And just for the fact that she said you blacks and she didn't think anything racist was behind that shows a problem right there.
Yeah, it's the we talked about before on a different podcast, the binary way of thinking, like racist, yes, no, good, bad. You know, all they think of as a racist is using, you know, epithets and slurs and hooded Klansmen burning crosses and shit. And like that's a very limited and narrow and purposely limited and narrow definition of racist and racism to not look at it on a more systemic basis. And even with her as an individual, or me, you know, am I a racist? No, I don't believe in white supremacy. I don't support it. But am I indoctrinated and conditioned in a myriad of ways, subtle and unconscious, that lead me to make decisions and say things and do things that are, you know, inherently supporting and perpetuating supremacy? Absolutely. I'm a white man, you know, matriculated in the United States. If I'm not in some way, like, quote unquote, a little bit racist, like I wasn't paying attention. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be impossible. So I don't think of it as yes, no, racist, not racist, but like I do less harm to people of color than I used to a couple years ago.
But I also think there's a level of just complete lack of self-awareness in the mix. And that's where I don't have a lot of sympathy. I totally do in terms of, I appreciate the fact that perhaps when she said it in that moment, that wasn't her intent. Unfortunately, intent doesn't really mean very much mm-hmm. when you're saying these things to a room full of young people who paid you right. to go to that school. It's not a public school, so they paid tuition to right. come and get their diplomas. And their families that are sitting there trying to enjoy a moment with their loved one that they get to be celebrated. And this, you are the one who turned it into something like this. You are the one that made it into the spectacle that it has turned into. And She doesn't take any responsibility. It's always, well, I was made to do this because the person was in the front. I had to call security. It's like none of those things forced you to say what you said.
No, and I think a lot of times for her, and but put it like this, the way our system is designed, people that teach, a lot of them don't really have the heart and the love for the children.
Yep.
Mm.
Not like they used to. Years ago,
yeah, that's true.
Into the teaching field, they literally went into the teaching field out of the love and care for children.
Yep.
And what happened around the year 2000, a lot of teachers retired. I don't think people forget to realize a lot of teachers retire after about the year 2000. And when that happened, you have a lot of young teachers coming in. They don't have any experience. A lot of times they send young teachers to the worst schools in the system.
Yep.
So you're dealing with so a lot of times and it's not, it's part of just the way the system is designed. A lot of times they send you to the poorest, they send you to the places that have a lot of brown people, black, Hispanic people. And a lot of times, for a lot of teachers, they do the teaching fellows. And I don't know if you know anything about that, but a lot of times, because I actually went to school to teach, with teaching fellows, they'll say, yeah, we'll actually pay for your schooling, but in return, you have to promise that you teach for X, Y, Z amount of years.
Oh, right. Teach America and a bunch of places did that.
Right. Okay. And so what happens is that a lot of times they'll finish and then a lot of them will go directly back to school and get another degree, or either they'll teach, but they'll teach in private schools, they're teaching charter schools, like they're kind of get away from teaching in the public school system.
Right.
And the thing is that when you have people in the system that are there, that's there, that are for a paycheck, not for the love of what they do,
yeah,
you end up opening up to people that are there just to fill a spot, and they don't care.
There's no investment. You described a revolving door.
Right. And also I blame society in general, because when it comes to our school system, yep, Rad Femme Lawyer, she was on our show. When it comes to shit that women do, per se, nobody cares. And teaching is one of those things that they quote-unquote think is shit that women do. Even though there are bright, wonderful, intelligent men in this field,
yes,
it's a small number of men. It's more white males, mm, and even less black males, and probably even a smaller percentage of Hispanic or Asian, you know, males, just in general here in our country.
And I'll note that that's only in the high school and lower fields, because once you get into more academic settings, it flips. And
well,
it's
the money changes
because the money's
too.
There, yeah, of course.
It's financial,
right? And to me, people don't want their taxes raised,
yep,
but yet they want you to teach their children. You know, a lot of people treat children as a form of daycare, not a place to really educate our children. And it's funny though, when you talk to people about, you know, the systems and things like that, and you know, I pay attention to the studies and the statistics that rank American children, and we fall lower and lower and lower and lower and lower
every
and
year?
Lower and lower in the sciences and the maths and, mm-hmm, the education and all this stuff. And but yet, if you listen to most Americans, we're the best, we're the brightest, we're the smartest. No, we're not.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the people that are the highest and the brightest, a lot of times, even it's sad, because you have people in our country, even with degrees, that are in certain fields, that a lot of times they'll go get somebody from another country that they can pay a fraction of the price, bring them here, and in the long run it will still be cheaper for them,
yeah,
yeah,
to hire somebody here in America. But yet you give me the false notion that if I go to college and get in thousands and thousands of ridiculous dollars worth of debt, that I am promised a job that right now I can't get. And it makes me challenge the whole school system. All jokes aside, it makes me just look at the whole thing, and mm-hmm, look at, if I was a young person right now, would I be willing to get in the debt of a house that I'm not living in? Would I be willing to get into that much debt? Would I be willing to, you know, live at home with my parents? Would I be willing to get in enough debt for Mercedes Benz that I will never drive?
Right.
So people don't realize that, like, your payments are $5,000, $6,000, and $7,000, you know, a month paying back student loans, you know, and this is real when you have somebody $2,000, $3,000, and $4,000, and $500,000 worth of debt. And don't talk about going to graduate school to get a doctorate. You're talking about some serious money.
Yep.
And
yeah.
Just things where, you know, they promise you, you know, that if you get this education and in the long run, you will actually make more. Yeah, you'll make more, but you know what you are in? Also more debt. And that's the part that they're not covering. And then they, you know, you look at the system. Why ain't nobody buying no home? Shit, they can't afford them. Nope. You know, why ain't nobody, you know, buying this and buying that? You can't. You know, why are people in up to their 30s now staying at home with their parents? Because you're in debt up to your
And that student loan debt is about the only debt. I don't know if there's any other debt I can think of that you can't default from. You can't declare bankruptcy and walk away. They changed that law? Because you used to not be able to. Oh, right. Really? When did that change?
Obama changed it.
Yeah, they changed that law because what was happening is not this generation, but our parents' generation was actually getting these degrees and not paying the loans back.
Yep.
So they had to change the laws to force people to pay these loans. It was like, hey, you can't basically get a quote-unquote free education. And in my opinion, I think higher education, in my opinion, should be free. You know, I think that, you know, if it was, more people would be educated. More people would do what they had to do. But we live in a country that is designed off of slavery, which people don't want to admit. We live in a country that's designed off of free labor. We live in a country that has a class, even though we say we don't have classes, but we really do. Yep. And it's one of those things where you will always need poor people, period. That's why.
No, not just need it. They're required. They're the engine. You have to have them or else nothing that the 1% needs to work functions without poor people.
And if everybody was educated and everybody was doing this thing and making all this money, you wouldn't have nobody working at Target. You wouldn't have nobody working at Walmart, nobody flipping burgers, because people were like, I'm not wasting my motherfucking time.
Well, you would, but you'd have to pay them.
You have to pay a lot more.
You'd actually have to compensate them for their time.
Do the two of you think that the notion of American exceptionalism is being challenged, not uncoincidentally, at the same time as white supremacy?
It's not coincidence at all. And it's definitely purposeful when you see the UN putting reports out sanctioning the United States for its criminal justice policies. This is unprecedented level of challenge in the world. We look like fools.
It's ridiculous, but because you have, my personal opinion, because you have a bunch of dumbasses in the House and the Senate that really don't care about the American people,
yep.
And they really don't care how they look abroad, because in their mind, we don't make errors, we don't make mistakes, we're America, damn it. And, I mean, like that's the impression, and it's funny because I was listening to NPR, and they interview, like, people that have to go abroad, and a lot of those people say that the other countries laugh at Americans. They laugh at how dumb we are. They laugh at the shit we debate about in the Congress and the Senate. They laugh at how ignorant we are on science and shit like that. They think, they were like, America is a fucking joke. But in here, like in the United States of America, you know, you ask people here, we're the best and we're the brightest. A lot of times we actually fail to realize that we are connected to the rest of the world. We can't separate ourselves anymore.
It's so true. You know, we lived abroad for 2 years and traveled and have traveled, you know, throughout our marriage extensively. We've been to the Mideast. We've been into Asia. We've been all over Europe. And I will say that it's been astounding to see what we've been together 17 years now, the change in attitude towards Americans, and not just in a, you know, related to war or anything, but a true perception of what their expectation is of an American citizen has changed significantly. And when we were in Argentina, they're a socialist country, so they do have free healthcare, they do have free education all the way through as far as you want to go. So if you want to be a doctor, if you qualify, you take the exams and you pass and you get in, you get to go. They pay for your housing, everything, to make sure that if you're able to do it, you become that profession, which is great. But it also creates a situation where being a doctor is it's a good job, but that's all it is. It's a good job. And it's not looked upon as like any better than the guy that owns the bakery or anybody else. At least that was my impression. Drew, correct me if I'm wrong.
I would say there's a slight financial uptick, but
it's so minuscule. Your neighbor doesn't signify who you live next door to.
Correct.
It doesn't signify you not interacting with everybody else like it does here, where there's this idea that you can make it to a level where you don't have to deal with people. And in Argentina, you didn't have that option. No matter what class you were, you had to deal with everybody.
Correct.
So, yeah, it's definitely interesting. Quick addendum to the story is that today the Gwinnett County NAACP received word from the chair of the board of directors at TNT Academy saying, quote, in light of recent events, the board of directors of TNT Academy has moved to dismiss Nancy Gordick as principal, it said. During the coming transition, we will continue to prioritize support for our most recent graduates. Moreover, we will continue our commitment to providing students with the best educational classes, transcription services, and academic credit recovery possible.
Oop, she got fired.
Bloop, bitch, you lost your job.
Boop.
Right, because what people fail to realize, when racists cost you money, they're the problem.
Yep.
Like, I don't care who you are, when you call somebody money, because like I said, this is a private school, people paid, which means you have people threatening them, not bringing their children back, not signing their children up. They was like, I'm sorry, we cannot lose money. You're not worth it.
Yeah.
No way. Not worth it at all.
Well, I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. There should be repercussions. There should be sanctions. She should, you know, should she been fired? I think she could have saved a job if she had been more, listen, I hear what you're saying. It was very inappropriate. I apologize. I didn't mean it like that. I'm so sorry. Like, it ballooned in its viral ability.
She could have made it much worse. I wouldn't even say that. She could have saved her job by doing her job.
Yeah,
because
true.
In her job as a principal would not be scolding the black kids full of parents and families and graduates of your school. If you made the mistake, the conversation should have been very, oh my gosh, you guys, I'm so sorry. Could you please come back in? It shouldn't be you yelling at people.
I hear you. She made a lot of errors.
She made the errors.
And I think even after it got filmed and went viral, could have perhaps kept a job had she handled the repercussions and ramifications of it differently.
Well, it didn't help. She had her son online calling people the N-word. So.
Yeah, he didn't help either. Like he literally made it worse. And the sad part about it, she might have could have survived if her child hadn't done that. Like, they was like, oh, okay.
It's true.
Yeah, that's the nuclear option.
She was about to start playing the I'm the victim, people are attacking me, because that's what they do. And she would have had a GoFundMe by Sunday and been on the talk shows Monday if that had happened. But her son totally didn't even allow that trajectory to happen with his foolishness, putting her address out there and all sorts of craziness.
Right. And the thing is like, why would you do that? Because now you jeopardize the family, you jeopardize random people showing up at our house, like just for safety reasons.
Yeah, that was unbelievably dumb. Ignorant as all hell. Did Karen, did you hear the CDC blew up the absentee black father myth? Did you see that article? And it's been a couple of different places, but the CDC did some research about missing fathers across race and class, more specifically.
Right.
And turns out black fathers are home more than white fathers.
But that's not the narrative that keeps perpetuating racist and people are just assuming all these things. Even if the mother and father are not together, a lot of times the black men are very involved in their child's lives, even if they're not directly living in their home. Now, you do have a lot of ain't shit people, but the thing about ain't shit people, that crosses all races, and that's something that people don't understand.
Yep.
Just like you have absentee fathers, they like men not standing up to being a father has nothing to do with race. That's individually among that man that makes that decision that I produce a child and I will not stand up for my responsibilities. And that has a lot to do with why a lot of times the system, be it fair or unfair, just or unjust, swings towards the women, because most of the time you have ain't shit people that come in there and talk about, well, I ain't shit, I don't want to pay. Mm-mm. You made it, you pay.
My dad, he's passed, but he was a total absentee, deadbeat, didn't talk to him for like 20 years.
Literally.
But the, and he's white, obviously, if it wasn't clear.
Really?
Yeah, he's pretty white, pretty white. I was going to say, oh, but the, again, the sort of like notion of, you know, black fathers, there's like, it's, A, it's a trope, it's ridiculous, it's a terrible narrative, but the fact that white people go to it is, I've lost my train of thought, but it's a function of
white anti-blackness.
No, but white people can see themselves apart from other white people and whiteness as a race. White people think of themselves as individual and like, oh, I'm not like, they can see a white absentee father and say, oh, that's just, you
that's
know,
just Jim.
That's just whatever. Right. I'm not like that. Whereas in the inverse, that when they apply that thinking to any black individual, it's a monolith and every one black person stands for every black person ever. And there was this one absentee father this one time. So now all absentee fathers ever and forever. You know what I mean?
Because it's easy to dismiss a people that honestly the way our country is that you really don't have to interact with if you don't.
That's the truth.
Ain't that the
you know, segregated as fuck.
Fail to realize like white people can opt out. They can always opt out. Black people, I don't have a choice. Everywhere I go is white people. Yep. I don't think white people understand that. You're everywhere. I don't mean no harm. Every fucking there.
You do not have to do any apologies on the podcast with us. I know we're everywhere. We're like fucking mold and shit, like some sort of virus. White people, we infect everything.
But it's amazing when you talk to some people and they act like that they're not. They act like, you went to HBCU. How are you gonna interact? Because you're fucking everywhere. I can't not interact with you just because I go to an HBCU. In fact, you're here. In fact, you get a minority scholarship because you're the minority here. So what are you talking about?
Yes, for sure. And also the thing that struck me about the CDC report was that I had a black friend of mine, great person, but and when she read the article and she said she was just talking to me about it. She said she was so disappointed in herself because the first thought she had when she saw it was that it must not be true. It must, the report must be like The Onion or a fake report or something because
no, the,
because she had been fed this idea of the absent black father herself as a black woman that she just assumed that it must be true. How could she hear it so often all the time, her whole life, and it literally not even be the case? And she said, then she started thinking and she literally sat and thought about all the black fathers that she knew that were in her life, whether they were related to her or friends or just anybody that she knew that was a black father. And she said, all of them are involved significantly with their children and their children's lives financially and on a time basis. And she was like, I have my own empirical evidence showing me this isn't the case. And still, I didn't even allow myself the space to believe that it wasn't true. I bought into it, too. And that's what supremacy does, because it coats everything. And also, Karen, you're so right about white people being everywhere. One thing I say all the time that white people don't quite get about being about not being white in this country is that any situation we go into, we have to think of how a white person is going to respond, because we have to adjust to whatever the expectation is. And then we get to think about how we are going to respond. They don't have to do that secondary thing. They're the norm. And so whatever they think is going to happen is the normal thing to happen. And they don't even have a concept of the brain power and the effort that it takes on a daily basis to be a person of color in this country and have to have that secondary set of interactions. Every time you do something, you walk into a room, okay, what are these white people thinking? Because that's going to, I have to think about that. I have to think about that.
Yeah, you have to contemplate that possibility.
I have to contemplate whatever that thing is. And they
how will it be perceived by white
people?
They
walk into every room being like, how am I going to react? Because they don't give a shit about how anybody else reacts to anything.
Right.
They don't care. They don't have to care. So
that's the thing. And the thing is, like, the system is designed for white people. It's designed to make them feel comfortable. It's designed to make them feel superior. It's designed to make them not care. It's designed to coddle them. And the system is really designed like that. And there are a lot of white people that actually care, have good intent, and are not racist. But the problem is that the system is catered to you. So unless you're willing to challenge yourself and think outside the box and step away from what's normal, unless you're willing to have real black friends, not my I see you every now and then black friend. I'm talking about a black friend you can talk to about race, about their family, about their interaction, how they feel about Ferguson, how do they feel about black man getting shot. You know, not the black friend that pop up every now and then in the picture, not the black friend that, you know, you buy reparation drinks to, not that black friend. I'm talking about like a real pure friendship. Because it's funny when you talk to them, they go, I have a black friend. That don't mean anything to me. Because you having a black friend, it's like, what's your definition of friendship? Are they somebody that you would make your friend on Facebook? Are they somebody that you would have dinner with at your house? You know, are they somebody that you would be willing to be seen out in public with? You know, like that type of a friend, not somebody to put up as a quota like you do Martin Luther King every time something happens, just so people will leave you alone and not challenge you.
Mm. I have a really serious question. Karen, you get reparation drinks?
I wrote down reparation drinks. It might be the name of the episode.
I feel like I've been holding out. I should have been buying reparation drinks all this time.
I'll take my reparation drinks and all sorts of other things. Anybody out there wants to give them to me.
Not to diminish what you're saying.
For real, reparation drinks.
Yeah. And I didn't realize it until talking to Roderick. And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, yeah. He's like, you go out. He said, you get down. You know, you just get drinks. He said, I don't turn them down. I said, I don't blame you. I don't turn them down. And it's one of them things that I didn't think was real until you get out there and you're like, okay, and we'll get insulted if you be like, I'm good.
Yes, like, no, they have to get it. I know those drinks.
Yeah,
and I've drank like, plenty. Good. Of them.
Like, I bought this bucket and we gonna drink.
Oh, too funny, too funny.
So now I think in my mind I went too far.
With what, the reparation drink?
Yeah, no, I just like, you know, like I'm white, you're black, you're getting reparation dick. I don't know.
Well, you know, that works too.
You know, I don't have a problem. We'll never get 40 acres in a mule, so you better get it in anywhere you
need. Oh, too funny, too funny. Well, we wanted to talk a little bit about you, Miss Karen. Yes, and just talk a little bit about, you know, your life as the queen of the podcast and how that's been for you. How many years have you guys been doing the podcast now?
We've been podcasting for 5 years. Wow.
That's amazing.
You're coming up on 1,000.
Coming up on 1,000 shows. Mm-hmm. That's like the amount of content. That's just like mind-boggling.
And your shows are like an average 2.5 hours.
And that's 2.5 hours of wall-to-wall, like pure entertainment. Like there is never a down moment or a down episode. I've never just not laughed my ass off at every episode. The episode you guys did last night, though, those dudes were so funny, Karen.
We have so much fun. And the thing about it is that we've been doing it for 5 years. And like you said, we're close to 1,000 episodes. This is on our regular show. We have about 300 episodes on a premium part.
Right.
And that's completely separate from the regular free shows that we have. And
I'm sorry. So the 1,000 doesn't even include like Balls Deep Sports?
No, that's just the actual Black Guy Who Tips.
Wow. It's coming up on the show. So you've got, I'm just blown away. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. So, because the thing is that for us, we love what we do. And we have always treated podcasting as a business. And I understand that for some people, podcasting is just a fad or just something that they kind of want to do, which is understandable because everybody has different levels of commitment that they want to invest. The study shows that the average podcast does not make it over 8 episodes. If you make it over 8 episodes, odds are that you will have some type of longevity. Like you normally just stop whenever you feel like it. Because so many people start and they don't really understand everything that's involved. Because a lot of times they think, well, we just talk, okay, about what? It's like a phone conversation, okay, but you still need to have some form of an organization, even if it's a phone conversation, it needs to be entertaining.
Right.
And the thing about it is just me, because I literally listen to hundreds of podcasts. Because a lot of people say, how you find all these guests? Because we're constantly on the grind. We're constantly listening. I think I listen to more variety of podcasts than Roderick does. But that's a lot of times because, like I said, he's dedicated to our podcast. So, you know, he really doesn't have the time. And I think everything from us got started through Roderick. Roderick is like the brainchild behind it. He started with the Black Guy Who Tips blogspot.com is how it started. And it started as like jokes that, you know, he was making among with his friends and posts that he was putting on the internet that people began to like and things like that. And people thought they were funny and they were sharing them and things like that. And he's a huge, huge, huge fan. And we both are of Keith and the Girl. Mm-hmm. And you know, Keith and the Girl have been doing this like 10, 11 years now.
Right.
And so, you know, this is when he had a normal 9-to-5. He would sit and he would just listen to him talk. And Keith and the Girl, two normal people, like literally two normal people. We would listen to them when they were both clowns, because they both used to be clowns. Mm-hmm. And they would talk about their stories about being clowns and going around city and doing shows with famous people and things like that. And, you know, they were dedicated and, you know, the show begins to grow and, you know, and they are where they are now. And Roger would listen. He was like, well, they're just two, you know, normal people, not superstars, not somebody famous, not somebody, you know, that already had a cult following. You know what I'm saying? Per se, just two normal everyday people, mm-hmm. you know, not pushed by NPR, you know, not, you know, just two normal people that said, hey, this is something that we love. We want to do. And he was talking to me about it, and he thought about starting a podcast. A, when he first came to me, I was like, what the fuck is a podcast? Because I, you know, I really didn't know. So that's when I started digging. And it was Keith and the Girl. And like most people, you start with your, I'm not trying to funny, your very boring and generic podcast, like your NPRs, your ESPNs, and they're very generic as far as say they're clean cut. They're not going to cuss. All jokes aside, they're not going to talk about certain subjects. If they do, they're not going to go so deep. They're not going to challenge you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's just one of those things where for a lot of people, they found our podcast. They said that they just they didn't even realize that Black podcast was out there, because when people first enter the podcast genre, especially when you first go on iTunes and Stitchers, all jokes aside, you're bombarded with white podcasts. Yep. Like you literally are bombarded. Like you don't even know that Black podcasts exist or out there. And we are out there. We're out there in droves. You literally have to find us. And I'm amazed. A lot of people found us by just typing in Black.
Huh.
Just the word Black. A lot of people don't really think about that, but if you type in Black, you will find all types of Black podcasts. Even if there is not Black in their name, if there's Black somewhere in the description, a lot of times, you know, it kind of will pop up. So I'm just prompting people, if you want to find more shows like this and other, you know, Black shows, or they have a Black host or Black perspective, that's one trick you can do to kind of broaden your podcast listening. Mm-hmm. But back to what I was saying before, it was Roderick's brainchild. He came to me and he asked me about podcasting, and I was like I said before, what the fuck's that? And so I began to listen and began to branch out. And, you know, when we first started, I didn't know what were the rules, what were the regulations. I didn't know what could you say, what could you not say, because like most people, I assumed it was radio. But it's not radio. It's completely, in fact, it's better than radio.
Much.
Because you can go as long as you want, as short as you want, you can mix it however you want. It's almost like working on a blank canvas when it comes to podcasting, literally. And the thing about working on a blank canvas, you can go as broad as you want, as small as you want. You can erase it and start over again. You can mix your colors up. You can, you know, one day have, you know, you're on the ocean. Next day, you want to be on a boat. You know, you can do so many things on the, and that's how I feel about podcasts. And that's why I tell people, there is enough room for everybody. If you got a voice and you want to come into this genre, there's room for you. And I think when me and Roderick first started, a lot of podcasts didn't cross promote. They didn't, because people treat it like radio. They didn't come on each other's shows. So when Roderick was initially started, we began to reach out, and people was like, well, why do you want me on your show? He was like, well, I like you. I think you're funny. Come be on our show. And like, people's like, sure, I had a good time with you. They was like, yeah, we enjoyed you too. And it's kind of branched out from that. So especially in a lot of the black podcasting circuits, a lot of people take for granted the cross promotion. Like, a lot of people come in now and they just assume, well, hey, this is what you do. You know you work hard, you build a following up, you know, you get your equipment straight, and then you start inviting guests, you know. But it wasn't always like that. And I think Rogic was very important in people cross promoting, talking about other podcasts, allowing people to come in, allowing, you know, just normal everyday people to have a voice. And from there, it just grew, and I grew as a person. I grew as having a voice. And I think for me, particularly being a black female, we're very marginalized in our voices, and you're always told your voice doesn't matter. You're always told your voice doesn't count. You know, you always are shunned to the side. You always are pushed to the side. You're always told your problems and your issues don't matter. And people will verbally tell you, or they will not verbally tell you, just by their actions. And one thing about Rogic is that he encouraged me a lot, you know, because we would end the show and then I would just say all these things. He was like, well, you could have sat down the show. I was like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. You know, I was like, I didn't know, you know, that I could be this open. I could be this frank. I could be this honest. And we began to grow, and I began to have a voice. And I think for me, once we started getting feedback and people were saying that they related to me and they understood me and they loved my voice, and it helped me. Like, the thing about it is that people came to us to find an outlet, and we do the podcast for an outlet. So we're literally running to each other for an outlet. I don't think people realize that. Mm. A lot of times people wonder, you know, why we have a closeness to our fan base and things like that. And a lot of that I contribute to Bomani Jones, who does the Evening Jones. He has also a show on ESPN. Mm-hmm. I think The Right Time with Bomani Jones. But prior to that, he used to do a show called The Morning Jones. And when this show first started, I think the show was like a year and a half, almost 2 years. And then the radio station shut down. It was a station up in Canada. And we learned so much through him because he was so open. He was very honest. He allowed people to call in. He allowed relationships to be real. He allowed people to be themselves. You know, he never shunned anybody. He was very open. And he made it a family. And that's one thing about our podcast that I love. It's literally a family. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why we are very open, and we just, you know, we just get on the mic and have a conversation. It's organization to the chaos sometimes. It might look chaotic, but it's not.
Mm.
And it's just one of those things where we let the conversation go where it may. We don't try to, because a lot of times people try to be very tight and restrictive. But if your podcast is not structured like that, you need to just let it flow. Because a lot of times when you let it flow, you will be amazed at where you end up. A lot of times people kind of want to predict where the conversation will go. Sometimes the unpredictable conversations will be the best conversations you will ever have.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we've realized just doing this podcast and growing. Everything is organic with us, you know, because Rogic does a lot of preparation. He has a lot of things up front. So he knows, but
sure.
I don't. Like, a lot of people fail to realize my reactions and my response are authentic because I've been at work all day. So when he puts stuff on me, I'm looking like, what the hell is this? What's going on? Like that's a true response because it's literally the first time that I'm hearing it or seeing it and things like that. And it's just one of those things where for me, I love what we do. It really shows. And I'm happy, and I think for me, the thing about the podcast that kind of grew is it was funny, though, because Rogic has been laid off several times, and every time he got laid off would be right around my birthday. Mm-hmm. I think when I turned 30, he actually got laid off from one job on my birthday.
Wow.
And when he got laid off the first time, we were already doing the podcast. But it was just one of those things where they kind of, it's sad, but in America, they emphasize so much on your worth is worth your job. You know, if you're not working a regular standard 9 to 5 punching the clock, you're not nobody.
Right.
You know, they don't promote artistic people. They don't really promote people that think outside the box, which is what Roger does. And so sitting in a cubicle is just not him, if that makes
sense.
Sure.
Right. No, no.
Him, and it's not his personality. And it was one of those things where I never pressured him, but it was one of those things where he was like, okay, you know, they offer the job, I'll take it. And when he got this job, he hated the job. I could literally tell it's almost like it was literally soul sucking.
Sure, of course.
I don't think people really realize when you're stuck in a job that's soul sucking, a job that just takes everything out of you just to get up, just to go, just to be there. You would rather be anywhere else in the world but there. And our society teaches you that that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you're like, this can't be life. Life should not be like this.
Yep.
And so what had happened was that when Roger had called me when he had got laid off from this job, and it was actually about 3 or 4 days before my birthday, when he got laid off from this job. And I had told him years ago, we had talked about it and we had discussed about going premium, but you know, with both of us working 40 hours a week, that was damn near impossible.
Right.
And so I remember I was at work and he called me and he was like, well, baby, they laid me off. And I told him, I said, good. I was happy. I was literally happy. And he was frightened and scared, which I completely understand because nobody wants to get laid off from the job.
Sure.
But for me, I was like, I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know how you're going to do it. But I know you're smart and bright and intelligent. Better go out there and Google, do whatever you got to do, because we're about to make this a motherfucking business.
Nice.
That's exactly what I told him. And I pushed him and I supported him because that's my job as a wife. And I think that everybody looks at, you know, relationships differently. Don't get me wrong. But I'm talking about my job with my husband.
Yep.
Like, my job is to support his dreams, support his aspiration, praise him, and let him know that wherever he leads me, I will follow. Why? Because I love him. And if this boat sinks, it'll sink with the both of us. And if this boat floats, it'll float with me beside you. And
nice.
I'm in it, and it's sincere with all my heart. And it's just one of those things that not only for me, but the fans don't really understand how much they meant, how much they exceeded our expectations.
Aww.
Because, you know, Roger was like, well, I'll get a tattoo if you get to 50. We got to 50 in no time. He kept bumping the number up. He got scared and he got nervous.
You know what, though? It everything you're saying is so clear in the actual work that you put out, you know, that the two of you do. And, you know, I would say for Roderick, and I'm not trying to, like, you know, pump him up too much, but his comedic, you know, that's not a, when you're taking like an aptitude test or an intelligence test, or there are all these different traditional measures, this, that, and he might be a genius independent of that, but he's got a skill and a talent that's really, you know, it's good. It's really good. And it should be, you know, on a podcast, and he should be writing for Conan's opening, you know, monologue. I'm for real. He's sharp. He's got a comic,
mind
that just, and it comes at a pace that's, you just know he's thinking even more, right? He's delivering like 5,000 more things than I could ever think of, and he's giving you half of what he's saying.
Yes, and that's true, because I think for us, for a lot of people, when we made the transition and we got everything up and running, just the joy and the peace that overcame him from not having to go to that fuck-ass job.
Yes.
Nice. That was awesome that you were able to, you know, support him in that and make that happen. That's got to be really rewarding for both of you.
But I think I think it also stems from what Cameron was saying, was that you guys are true partners, not just in the business, but in life. And you bring that to the show. And it's very evident, you know, watching you guys and listening to you guys. And that's what we as audience members respond to.
Identify with, sure.
And identify with. But I also, it just brings me to mind of this, you know, those moments in your life where, you know, what you need and the skills you have and what's available come together in this really amazing way. And it seems like that's what happened for you guys, because, you know, I don't think radio would have been a good fit for Rod. I don't, you know what I mean? There's so many other venues that would have not been possible a little bit earlier than you guys were making this transition. But podcasting just really, it just fits so well in your wheelhouse that it's like you guys were born to do it, because that's how when you say it seems like chaos to me, it never seems like chaos. Seems like it's fluid. It always seems like, you know, you guys are always in sync with each other, and you say that your reactions are real, and that's part of what makes it so fluid, is that your reactions are real. One of my favorite things about your show is when you never know the name of any artist that Rod talks about.
I'm sorry.
No, but listen, but this is such a great example of something that's not a set bit. It's not Baller Alert, and it's not, you know, fucking with black people. It's not a specific thing, but you guys do it all the time, and it's a little dance where he's like, oh, you don't even know who that is. And then he has to play it, and you're like, oh, yeah. It's something that happens so often in the show that for us as a listener, I'm like, oh, Karen's never going to know who that is. Like, I think it to myself, and then you guys have that great interaction with each other. And it's the little things that do make it so enjoyable to listen to. And, you know, we can't say enough about the show and how wonderful it is. And it inspired us to start our show. So
you say you can't say enough, and, you know, the flattery, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Have Karen, have you guys figured out that we basically bit your entire show?
You know what? I'm not mad, because the thing about it is that, because when you do something and you make it look easy, that means you're doing it right. And it's just one of those things where a lot of people see what we do and they want to do it, and I encourage anybody to, because there's room for everybody. But what I've realized is that it takes a particular person or people or group to really be a podcaster and have longevity in this game. It's not meant for everybody, even though, you know, a lot of people get into it, but a lot of people might get into it and might realize that this might not be the genre for them, but something else might fit that need that they need in their lives. This actually fits us, just our personalities and who we are and what we do. And, you know, it's one thing that we have always said, is that we could not do and we would not be where we are without the fans, because the thing about it is that for us, we were podcast listeners prior to doing a podcast. So we always consider everything that we do, we always consider it from the listener's perspective. Too many people get on the mic and talk out, but they never bring back in. So a lot of shows don't do feedback. A lot of shows don't do 5-star reviews. Like that's something that we push, because it matters. All the feedback that we've given people, and you don't even know if they got it. You don't know if they read the email. You have no idea. It's like you're sending it into a black hole.
Right.
No idea, because they don't respond back to let you know that it's been acknowledged. And to us, it was very important to have feedback and interact, because when we first started the feedback show, when we first got feedback, because a lot of times people go, well, I don't have feedback. Yes, you do. You just ignore it. When people treat you,
that's feedback.
Right. When people leave you comments on Facebook, star it.
Right.
Like that's what we did. That's how we initially would start feedback, because it wasn't a lot, but it was feedback. And people have a tendency to turn their nose up at those types of feedback. But it's somebody out there that liked you enough to respond to you and to interact with you. So it means something to them to know that you hear them out. And even when it comes to sound and quality and all that stuff, we always think of it from a listener's perspective. Because I know for a lot of people, they go, well, sound doesn't matter. Okay. We expect the same high quality from everybody else that you get from ESPN, a company that pumps billions of dollars into their sound equipment. Mm-hmm. You expect us to have the same quality, you know, on a shoestring budget. Yep. And yeah. It's one of those things like when you first start, because what we have now, equipment-wise, we didn't always have this. You work with what you got.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you move up from that depending on how much you want to invest in dedication. Because the thing about it is that we tell people, people go, well, it's free. Mm-mm, it's free for you. It's not the person producing.
Right. And I'll say this. I'm not trying to say like I'm a podcast like snob, but my hearing's bad. And specifically, I have like donut hole hearing loss, like right in the middle, like voices. So if you've got a bunch of static and it's like an echo chamber and the connection's really bad, I struggle to hear it. I like literally have a hard time listening to it, and it sometimes doesn't work. Like if I'm in the car in particular, I don't know why the car speakers are really bad for my hearing.
And I think for me, I listen to podcasts with all types of quality. Don't get me wrong. Like I'm not turning my nose up, you know, because I know after, especially if you do it for any period of time, people do upgrade and they do little things to make the sound quality better. You know, because it's just one of those things where that's why a lot of times I listen for podcasts for longevity, you know, because a lot of times when people come on our show, we don't do it when the first few episodes, because you might not last, you might opt out, you might change your style, you know. So we periodically listen to people a lot of times before we even consider bringing them on the show. And I think that's something people don't consider either, because the thing about it is that our audience is so big and so vast that we're not going to give them just anybody.
Mm.
People don't understand that. It's like once you get to the point where you have a voice, when I tell people we don't support bullshit, like we just don't. We listen to a lot of podcasts, but if we bring them on our platform, we're not bringing them just anything. And when people know that they can trust you, that's how you get the Bevels and the, you know, Shadow Dogs and all these people sponsoring you. Because even when it comes to that, not to get off topic, but even when it comes to that, it's people that don't need to take.
This is Kelly Riddell, and this is your Washington Time.
Is that me?
No, it's me. It's me.
Hey, Washington Time.
I got that.
I'm sitting here doing my worst imitation of the Soulja Boy, because you're talking about, like, you know, we don't bring no bullshit on the show. Like, we was on the show. What? Yeah. Get it.
It was a high bar. This is another high bar having you on our show. So we're very excited that you're here. Obviously, as we've said, we love the show. We stand for it all the time. And we talk about how much of an inspiration you guys were for us, just even starting to do anything. And from something small as the inspiration, or as big as the inspiration, to the microphones we use, you know, is from you guys' recommendation of what worked for you. So it's a lot that you guys give back to the podcast community. And, you know, I think that if you drew a giant family tree, you guys have, you know, children and grandchildren and great grandchildren in the podcast game now that all stem from, you know, the roots that you guys put down. So
like the coaches' trees.
Yeah.
Football.
I mean, it's really, really significant. Your footprint in this medium is just, it's huge. It's large. So kudos for all of that hard work. Do you find that your, do you consider time that you spend doing the podcast with Roderick as time together, or do you see that as separate from time you spend together?
For me, everything is time together. Mm. Because Roderick is one of the, put like this, Roderick is one of the few people in the world that I can spend extensive time with and not want to punch them in the eye. because most people do not realize how annoying they could be, how self-centered they can be, how not considerate they could be to other people. Like, they just don't realize how much of a jackass they are to other people. Nobody ever wants to think of themselves as the bad person, but sometimes you get on people's fucking nerves. Sometimes people really don't want to hear what you got to say. Mm. Sometimes people don't care about what you had to eat. I'm just keeping it real. Sometimes people just don't care. So he's one of the few people that I could spend extensive amount of time with, and I'm okay with. I think the biggest adjustment, I'm a talker. So the biggest adjustment was after, especially after we started doing it all the time, was learning when to talk and when not to talk. Because it's one of those things where, because I talk, I don't separate the two, if that makes sense. Yeah. I just talk to Roger all the time because he's here.
Whether you're recording or you're not recording, it's right. Just you guys talking.
Right.
Got it.
You know, and because we talk all the time, some things we don't talk about purposely, strategically, until we get on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's certain things that he knows I have a strong opinion about, he has a strong opinion about. You know, but we wait to talk about it when we actually get on the show.
Yeah. We have that moment where sometimes we'll start our conversation, it'll start getting good,
stop.
And we'll go up, save it for the show, because we know it would be great for the show and that we could really get into it, you know, doing the show. And I've also found it to be a way of, you know, not to say forced listening, but
for sure.
An intent listening that you, mm-hmm. because you're producing content, and it's a different way of interacting. I don't think a lot of people who, that's why you see so many, people that are romantically involved doing podcasts together, or best friends doing podcasts together, because there's an intimacy there in those moments that you're doing the show
and
together.
On the real, I said we bit your show entirely. Like, you're describing the different, like I said, like roles that, you know, Rod plays is maybe like, you know, one part of the production, and the role you play, and I'm the Karen. I you know, Leslie does all the like podcast stuff. Like, in fact, there was a period of time where. You know, like it was like a problem. Like, there was like, you know, you make little improvements and, you know, hiccup here, you try to do this, that. And in putting the show together, like, because you can't just come in like totally blind. You're like, what are you going to talk about? I don't know, I'll fucking wing it. Like, that'd be kind of, maybe somebody can. I couldn't do that. So first there was a learning curve of like, okay, I don't want to write things down. I don't want to, you know, do too much. I want to, like, you know, if I read everything and I prepare and I think I'm going to say this or that, it's a terrible show. Whereas if I kind of have like a broad stroke and I just sort of, you know, add my own point at the right time. And like you said, I have to listen and know when to talk and not talk. But with Leslie and me doing the production part, she was taking a very, like, I don't know, like an editorial, like brutal red pen to it. And I don't know why it was like, maybe it was like male ego or something, but like we had to like get over there. She's like, wait a minute, what is going on with you? Why are you feeling like this? What's going on? Let's unpackage this.
Why are you so attached to this article about, you know, frogs in the Amazon that I don't want to talk about? What's so important about it?
It was whatever it was. But so there's, you know, there's little pieces you learn and...
Yeah, because every now and then I might send him a thing, say, I won't talk about this. But most of the time, because he knows me so well, when certain shit comes up, he automatically know to go ahead and start it and save it, because I'm going to have a comment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I know I had tweeted to you after an episode maybe 2 weeks ago or so, and you and Roderick were talking about feminism, and mm-hmm. that you do not consider yourself a feminist. Mm-mm. The other day, and I said, "Ooh, maybe we can talk about it on the show." So a couple of things happened in between then and now. One is this great article came out that said, "Shit, white feminists need to stop doing," which we'll talk about those few points. But the other thing that happened was Professor Saida Grundy from Boston University had some tweets. She's due to start work at Boston University as a professor of African American studies at Boston University. And so she sent out a bunch of tweets that were race related, talking about her personal stance on race. So some of the tweets said, white masculinity is the problem for America's colleges. Oh, doesn't sound too out of the ordinary to me. She said, quote, deal with your white shit, white people. Slavery is a y'all thing. Another tweet said, every MLK week, I commit myself to not spending a dime in white owned businesses. And every year I find it nearly impossible. So, there was a sample. I would say that's the gist of the tweets, but they were pretty truthful in their factual nature. And there's been this huge backlash against her from the school, from a bunch of, you know, conservative academics, you know, calling her racist, saying that she's anti-white people. How can she teach white students at this university when clearly she has a bias against them? Blah, 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 blah. And it got me to thinking about feminism, because had this been a white woman who was under fire for whatever comments she made, the entire white feminist trademarked
white feminism, TM,
would have, the machine would have started immediately in defending her.
Sure.
And here's Saida, a black woman, really, she's an African-American studies professor, talking about race in a public forum. That's what academics do.
And it's not like anything she said was incendiary or wrong.
Nope.
I'm a white man. I kind of resemble and agree with her assessment.
And white shit, slavery is white shit, yeah. FYI.
I said I agree with her.
It's all true. It's facts. It's a fact. But nary a white feminist has come to her defense in the academic world or beyond. The silence has been, you know, complete and whole and ridiculous and irritating for me. I do consider myself a feminist. That's one of the things that I put, as you asked me to describe myself, it's very high on the list of who I am. I went to an all-girls high school that was very empowering and instilled me with very strong feminist ideals. However, the intersectionality of my blackness and feminism is always going to be an issue, because white feminism, trademark, does not understand what that means. So I totally get when people don't want to be considered a feminist. But I also have this idea, just me personally, that I don't want to allow other people to define the things that I consider myself. And I think feminism is one of those things that I can allow white feminists or white feminism to define what it is, or I can stick with the ideals that I've learned them as, which is fighting for the equality of all women in the world at all times and everything that goes into that and what those ideals stand for. So I thought we'd go through these things that shit white feminists need to stop doing. And then we'll see if they stop doing these things, if you would think that feminism would be a little more palatable for you.
Okay.
So the first one is they need to stop believing their experiences of marginalization are universal. So they think they own womanhood, and then they try to explain it to women of color, like, oh, we know, we've dealt with sexism, so we know everything. We understand oppression. Because we're women. White women.
This is what slavery must have felt like.
This is what it must be like. That's how I know.
he grabbed my butt.
Number two is one of my favorite, white feminism, trademark, which is crying about how we're all on the same team. This is also known as, why are you being so mean to me?
This is wasn't that Patricia Arquette?
Yes. She actually ticked off almost all of these in that bullshit ass situation. So white feminists tend to have this fantasy that we're going to tackle this giant slavering beast called the patriarchy, and that once it's done, everything will be magical and all the world's problems will be solved. Except racism will still be here. Except gender equality in terms of transgender individuals and queer individuals will still be around. But we're all on the same team, man. Why are you picking on me? Number three, talking about hijabs or burqas or sex selective abortion or really anything. Like, we don't need your opinion about any of those things. You aren't more enlightened than everyone else. Stop talking. Go take a nap, because they don't get it. Number four, thinking that all sex workers are all miserable wretches who hate their lives. This one probably isn't just for white women, because I think a lot of people have this idea, but certainly a lot of white feminists just like pull it up and they say, I believe women have agency and can make decisions about their lives, except when it has to do with sex work, at which point I will assume that either someone is exploiting them or else they're self-hating gender traitors only interested in the male gaze. You guys touched on this a little bit when you were talking about Laverne Cox and Bell Hooks a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. which is this idea that a pro-woman stance is you telling a woman what a woman is. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really make much sense there, and it's completely anti-feminism and anti-woman. Number five, arguing that all other forms of oppression are over, so we need to focus on women. That one's for Patricia Arquette. Yeah, it just...
You know what this is?
What?
White people.
Exactly. The article finishes saying, white feminists, this is a call for you to get your shit together. The point of equality isn't to claw your way to the top so that you can treat other people just as badly as white dudes have treated you. We need to elevate each other, amplify each other's voices, and maybe let someone else tell us if we're allowed to be on their team. Because as per Flavia Dozen, if your feminism is not intersectional, then I'm sorry, but it's complete bullshit. So, yeah, what do you think, Karen, about all of these feminist, I would say these things that white feminists need to stop doing? And also, do you see a difference between white feminism, trademark, and feminism, the ideal?
To me, when you look at it as a whole, a lot of times you have to go back in the background and the history and just where it sprung from and people's idea of what it means to them. I think for me, even if you get white feminists that quote unquote don't get it to do this, there are still some things that you're just going to have to deal with, because we live in a unfair white male dominated world, which is something that you can't get over. So you have to continue to fight, continue to push, continue to demand. And I think any group that feels, any group in power that feels challenged, the way that you stop it is just to make everything their fault. Instead of looking at yourself. And for a lot of white women, this has been put upon them. So they turn around and use that same tactic. Because when you do that, you don't have to talk about the issues. You don't have to talk about the problems. You can talk about how they're wrong and they're not supporting your cause. That happens a lot. It actually happens too much for me.
Right.
Because all the divisions, all the, you know, my feminism is not like your feminism. All the pointless debates... all you're doing is wasting time, and the oppressor is just laughing at you because you're not moving.
Yeah.
Nothing's changing, because instead of you going, I really don't give a fuck if we don't think of feminism the same, our goal is the same.
Right.
Our goal is the same. I don't care what division of feminism you come from.
Right.
But at the end of the day, our goal is that every woman that is in the world, or any person that identifies as a woman, is also included into this group. Because the thing about it is that a lot of women that are in feminism, they are pro-woman, but they not pro-LGBTQ. But what they fail to realize is that these same people are... supporting you and fighting for your rights. And the thing about it is this: any marginalized group needs to have empathy and sympathy for any other marginalized group. Any group that has ever been forced to be silent needs to turn around and look at another group and say, I understand your plight. But instead is the oppression Olympics.
Yeah.
Better than your oppression. You don't understand because you're quote unquote not a true woman. You know, you don't understand because you're not this, that, or whatever. And to me, it becomes very, very frustrating, and it's very counterproductive. And all the division isn't helping anybody out at all. Because at the end of the day, every woman wants the right to be herself, whoever she is or however she got there. I don't care. Every woman wants the same rights. They want the right to be treated equal. They want the right to equal pay. They want the right to be treated as a human being. They want the right to not be considered less than. They want the right to have control over their bodies. They want the right to have control over how many children they have. They want the right to get married. They want the right to get divorced. They want the right to fuck where they want to. They want these rights. They want the right to have sexual freedom. They want these rights. They want the right to be a mom, the right not to be a mom, the right to have an abortion. They want these rights. They want the rights to be able to wear short shorts. They want the right to wrap their asses up in a burqa if they fucking feel like it. They want these rights. That's all they're asking for. And the thing is, like, every woman is different, but a lot of times these groups have their rules, regulations, and because yours is not like mine, yours is less than, which is the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's why you see all the debates and all the arguments and all the confusion and people tapping out. And a lot of times you end up making men that actually support your cause tap out too.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of men that are feminists. There are a lot of men that believe these things. There are a lot of men that support these things. And a lot of times, just like when women go in these male-dominated groups and they begin to speak and the men tell them to shut the fuck up, you turn around and do it to the males that come in the group, and they might have valid opinions, but you tell them to shut the fuck up. And it's counterproductive because they might have a valid point. Just because somebody is not of the group does not mean they don't understand the group. And a lot of feminists miss that. Any oppressed group needs somebody outside of the group that's not oppressed to care. This is how change is always made.
Mm-hmm.
You can never make a march or make a statement or make a change in this country alone. You just can't. You got to have somebody that's not associated with the group to care. You've got to.
Now, I would just like to say that this might be the biggest feminist speech that has happened on this show yet. So it's shocking to me that you don't consider yourself a feminist, because I, if I recorded this and I played it back, that's what I hear as a feminist manifesto that you're espousing here, which I think is awesome, and it's a really good one.
I had something queued up for that, you know.
Hold on a second, Drew. So one thing that I always, when I talk to people that say, like, I don't want to be labeled a feminist, is that, and the reason why I really am very specific about saying white feminist, trademark, because the thing about feminism is that because intersectionality exists, we bring all different parts of ourselves to the idea of feminism and equality for women. And with white women in particular, unfortunately, they bring supremacy with them because that's what they have. That's the baggage that they have to deal with and what they have to sort out. But just because they bring supremacy with them doesn't change my connection to feminism and wanting to claim that as my own, because it's just not something I allow somebody else to define for me. So I'm not putting any pressure on you or anything else. I'm just saying, if you ask me, I would say that you're a feminist because you stand for feminist ideals, which is equality for women and choice for women and for women to have a voice in their lives and in this society and in the world that's equal to everybody else, whoever that woman is, whatever her life is, whatever her station is, whatever, however she brings herself into the world, you want her to bring her whole self. And that's what feminism is about. It's easy to distort things. And I've had this issue with our faith. We're Unitarian Universalists and we have 7 principles that we believe in, but we've been having a lot of trouble with our faith because they're not applying those principles to the Black Lives Matter movement in a significant way. And I had to make a choice. Do I still consider myself to be a Unitarian Universalist, or do I allow these people that I feel are not living up to those ideals to define my religion for me? And it was tough to kind of look at that and think how I was going to approach it, how I was going to marry those two things and still be myself. And there are some ways that I feel I can interact with my religion, and there are some that some ways I can't anymore because of this. But I also would say that I still believe in those 7 principles, and I still believe that we as a faith need to live up to them. And so I'll continue to fight for that and continue to hold those as dear in my personal life as well. So I'll say that. And then, Drew, what did you have to play? Because we had some feminist music. Yeah, but music, no, I mean,
it was after her speech. She gave a feminist speech. Yes. It's a little anticlimactic now.
Well, then you don't have to play it. Next time Karen comes on, we'll have her play it next time.
And the funny thing is, like, when me and Roger was talking about it, we also talked about it after the show. And it's just one of those things where, for me, I guess it's just one of those things where I kind of do everything, but put on the cape, if that makes sense.
Like, I hear you.
It's just one of those things where I'm okay, you know, being the sixth man. I'm okay being called from the bench. I'm good with that. Like I'm fine with that. Now, I think for me, because these issues are very passionate. I feel very passionate about these things. Mm-hmm. These things are real to me.
Yep.
I cannot opt out of my blackness. I cannot opt out of being a woman. Nope. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think that just social media and seeing those things is one of those things where I'm like, okay, you know, like, for me, it's just hard, because I think Roderick actually calls himself a feminist now. He was like, fuck it, I'm a feminist.
He is a feminist.
Right, that's what he said. He said he was, and he's sticking to it. And I'm looking at him like, okay, you know, I'm not going to say that I will never pick up that title. I wouldn't say that. But I do know that I do. But I just, I love women.
Mm-hmm.
I love all women, mm-hmm. but I particularly love black women because I am one.
Mm-hmm. And because we the best.
Yes.
Fire.
And I think for me, because, but like this, when you grow up, I guess for me, I feel so passionate because some of the ways I grew up as a child, being marginalized, being told my opinion didn't matter, being told, you know, I was black and ugly, being told I wasn't going to amount to anything, you know, just growing up in these environments, you know, after you become intimate for the first time, being called a whore, you know, not even really understanding what you're doing or what your body's going through, thinking my body was dirty, thinking there was something wrong with me for having these desires. But as you get older and as you begin to learn and as you begin to educate yourself, you realize that a lot of people have dealt with this also. And it lets me know that I'm not alone in my feelings. And for me, if I can do anything that I can to prevent any young lady from having to deal with the pain and the heartache and the suffering that I had to go through, I've done my job. If I've made the burden for her easier, if I made the right for her to have a choice easier, I feel like I have done my job. And for me, if that means speaking out, if that means telling people that they're wrong, if that means, you know, telling people it's not right to do X, Y, and Z, because most everything in life, is because I'm black, I look through the lenses of race. Anything you deal with in life, if you look through the lens of race, everything will make sense, because so many people don't look at life through race. Certain situations don't understand. Because I look at it through race, I understand when you talk about LGBTQs, I understand. When you begin to talk about Mexicans and legalization, I understand. And immigration, and talk about drugs and legalization of drugs. Like, I completely understand sex and sex workers. I understand, because I always look at it from that perspective. And when you do, your eyes will be opened up and you will be actually look at it in a more detailed manner versus looking at it across the surface. Most of the time situations happen, let's say with Ferguson, they look at it across the surface, but nobody wants to dig down to why. Everybody wants to make an excuse. Everybody wants to blame the victim, but nobody wants to ask why. Because once you get down to why and you begin to fix why, things will change. Nobody wants to take that effort. Why? Because the effort takes work. It takes patience. It takes understanding. It takes empathy. It takes sympathy. It takes reaching out. It takes you pushing yourself beyond what you thought. It requires expanding your mind. It requires challenging yourself. It requires looking within and realizing that you might be wrong about some stuff, realizing that some stuff that you learned as a child was wrong. Mm. And people don't want to admit that. Everybody wants to think that their parents were perfect and always taught them right. Your parents taught you based off of their knowledge and wisdom at that time. But as you grow up and as you go out, you will begin to realize that they didn't know everything. There was no way in the world. But when you begin to pick up new knowledge, apply it to your life. And for me, the feminism thing, I feel so passionate and it's heartfelt because it breaks my heart when I see them passing these laws about abortion, when I see them passing these laws about LGBTQ, when I see, you know, them wanting to, it's amazing because it's almost like America has forgot history. When you see people talking about they wanted to do a taxation on polls, and you go, do you really understand the history behind that? Do you really understand that it's insulting? Do you really understand? And I think for me, because I have a good heart, my heart breaks when I see a lot of, you know what I mean, just a lot of the, but I'm a person, I don't like to see injustice, if that makes sense. I don't care who you are. I just don't like to see it, because it's one of those things where I just want everybody to be able to live their life and live it free. Mm. You know, yes, you have rules and regulations, but live it free and live it to the best of whatever it is that you're going to be in life. You know, it hurts me when I see people telling people that you can't do this or you can't do this, because I put them limitations on myself. And once I begin to change my mindset and begin to say, yes, the world is racist. Yes, I am a woman. But I also have control over my destiny.
Mm. You know, you might not wear the cape, but you just said, yes, I'm a woman.
I am a woman. Hear me more.
Just, you might not wear the cape, but girls, you run the world.
We need to.
Karen included.
Get it together.
So long, but that's just something I want to share.
Please. Oh my God, it's fantastic. And it's exactly why I wanted to have that conversation, because, you know, whether you take the label or not, we'll continue this discussion at a later time. You know, it's important to have women like you that have that universal perspective on what feminism is and what it means to truly be there for women and be about women's empowerment, because there's a lot that goes into that. That means putting your own expectations about womanhood to the side. Mm-hmm. And coming into a situation with whatever privileges you have. If you're cisgender, that's a privilege that you have. If you're allowed to get married, that's a privilege that you have, that some women don't. And so it's so important to hear women like you speaking out and talking about the lessons that they've learned over their lifetime, because we do evolve, and that's part of being a feminist as well. We start out on one end of a spectrum and continue moving forward from there. So apparently Terrence Howard has a really small penis, just to segue real quick.
Talking about feminism, right into Terrence Howard's small junk.
It's a perfect springboard. Segue.
Springboard.
According to the bastion of, good journalism today, one TMZ, ooh, Terrence Howard says he has hard proof his ex-wife extorted him, threatening to expose details about his genitals to the world unless he paid her handsomely.
Oh, TMZ be knowing. So
they be knowing.
It's true.
They the new Woodward so and Bernstein.
Make sure I understand this blackmail, Craig. She had photographic evidence of a small penis, and she was going to release it unless he paid her. Is that what they're saying?
Yes. He filed legal documents in his spousal support war with Michelle.
But doesn't that, like, I'm sorry, you know, but like, if you're telling people that she's threatening you with the photo of a small penis and you're going to court about it, that like almost tells the world that, like, yes, you do have a small penis. Like, you've just confirmed it.
But I think his point, she got all this money. They were only married for a year. He gave her 5 years worth of spousal supports, unheard of usually in celebrity divorces. But he says he now agreed to pay her for 5 years because she extorted him. And he says some of it is on tape. He says while they were bickering about the amount of support he'd paid, he threatened her to release naked photos and video of him unless she got what she wanted in the docs filed by his attorney. He says he secretly recorded her saying, I can make a good $2 million right now. You want to see your little dick out there in front of TV?
Oh shit.
Oh my gosh. She also says that she will tell every woman in the world that he gave her an STD. She says, and I quote, according to the tapes and TMZ, trust me, you're fucking with the wrong person. You're fucking with me way too much. I will fucking bury you deep in the ground.
Wow.
Woo. Oof. Yes.
I'm not for this. Like, no. Mm-mm. No, this is not good.
No,
she's not bitter.
She's really bitter, especially because he's paying her so much money. And the reason why is because she's entitled to a big chunk of his empire salary based on their agreements. And he doesn't want to pay her. And he's like, you know, I never should have agreed to this. And when I agreed to it, I had just lost that Marvel money. And I thought, who cares? How much money am I really going to make? And then Empire happened. And obviously, it's a much larger sum than he originally anticipated this 5-year payments to be.
Hey, do you wonder, maybe that's why he sabotaged his own, wasn't he the Marvel comic? He was supposed to be the one.
Nah, he sabotaged that because he an asshole.
I'm just saying that would be another reason, like, oh, I got to pay her so much money.
Listen, I'm not saying Terrence Howard's not a jerk off because he totally is. And he is.
And now you're saying he's got a small penis.
And he has
too.
Beat women as well. So he's also a notorious wife beater or partner beater. So this
he's a woman beating mine.
Yes, Maine. That's all he could play is people that act like fucking idiots. This is one go to. And that wasn't going to work for War Machine or Iron, whatever. What was it? Iron
War Machine? War Machine.
Yeah, but he also was something else. Iron Patriot. That was the other thing that the character ends up being Rhodey in a couple of movies. He could have been in Don Cheadle, swooped right in and took that check right quick, though.
Yes, he did. Now, I ain't going to lie. Terrence was actually, the interaction with him and Tony was actually better. But, hey, it don't matter.
It's true, but you know, Marvel don't got to put up with that shit. They're like, forget that.
Right, that's why Hawkeye running his mouth. They're, honey, they're going to take you, put you to an arrow, and shoot you away.
You know, right now they're thinking they really should have killed his ass and kept Quicksilver alive.
Yeah, they should have.
You know they sitting there thinking that, like, damn it.
Fuck that.
What were we thinking?
Damn it. Hey, you know, this is a real special occasion.
Oh, yeah?
Speaking of biting shit from the black guy who tips. It's a 5-star review. It's a special day. Crescendo. Five-star review now. 5-star review now. Five-star review now. Bam. And actually, it's really special, in fact, because we have so few on iTunes that they don't put it up there. We don't get the aggregate. But I saw the number, and I was like, what the fuck? There's like a number of views, and I'm only seeing so many. And I was listening to your show on Saturday, the feedback. And like always, you guys say, hey, if you're not in the continental United States, you got to tell us because we don't see your review. And I'm like, hey, what the hell? I'm looking at iTunes. It's only in U.S. So I painstakingly went through and clicked every single flag and checked the international job for review in like 100 countries.
It's a task. That's why we're actually, do y'all use Macs or PCs? I think the Mac has a version that grabs it.
Ooh, we have both a Mac and a PC.
So maybe we'll do it with the Mac now. That
we're amba computer dexterous.
Right. Actually, Google and I think Nina from Project Fandom says that that's actually something that actually can go and grab it for you to let you know, regardless of where they put it at in iTunes.
Oh.
I did. There was a service, and I think someone just like basically goes and clicks the links or has an algorithm that does it for you. But it was like $5 a month or something. So I did this one time just to, and I didn't find all of them. There's still a review.
There's still one out
there. There's one missing review. But this one's from Finland. 5-star review from Hannah Metz. I love it. It's always a pleasure to listen to this podcast. In my white Northern European world, interracial John is a window to an unknown galaxy. And I love the way the old order gets unbalanced.
Nice.
Thank you. Right. Thank you, Hannah Metz.
Happy to bring you to a new...
Finland.
Finland.
That kind of...
I always want to go to Finland. A
someone in Finland listens
to
us.
I want to go to Finland because they have the Northern Lights there. Well, I'm always telling you that. You
is
never
that in
wanna,
Finland?
Yes,
Finland.
And you never want to go. Oh, no.
No, that's
yeah, that is Finland.
Is it Finland?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. The fjords in
well,
Finland.
Well, I still... Something about somebody in Finland across the world listening to you and me on a podcast, like, it kind of blows my mind.
It's awesome. So what's up to you, Hannah Metz, and hello to Finland.
Thank you.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about some TV and movie before we go. We literally, this week, started watching season one of Arrow.
Woohoo! In part because of...
In part because of your glowing reviews of said show. It's been a little tricky because now they're doing all these crossover. He's on The Flash and we watch The Flash. And I was like, oh my God, no, we're not supposed to know whatever this is. And I'll be like muting it because I don't want to know whatever the hell he's saying. If it's about the stuff that's going on Arrow right now, because we need to catch up, obviously. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about...
I'm gonna leave. I'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Is the Oliver Queen thirst, because that's real. They show him shirtless and working out every episode.
Oh, you guys right. Y'all at the very beginning. Yeah.
Man. But it's like, yes, please, more of it. My thing is, though, he does full, like, dialogue scenes while he's doing this exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what his real workout is like. Like, where he gets a workout. Because clearly that shit he's doing on this TV show is not working him out at all. Because if you're really working out, like, your heart rate is supposed to be up. You can't just be talking all lollygagging with Diggle like it's nothing.
Right.
And he carries grown men on his shoulders like ain't no thing but a chicken wing.
Mm-mm. Like a champ.
Just throwing them around, tossing them in trunks. That's not a dummy. It's a real grown person that he's like, yeah, I got this. Don't worry about it.
And it gets better. The Arrow, actually, I started the Arrow, and then I went to go do something else. And Roderick and Chris from Insanity Check have been raving about the Arrow for years. And I finally sat down and watched it. And I think I watched the first episode, and I got into season two. And about, and they're both like 20, 24 episodes. And I think I finished in like 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, we're going to be on that train. And we were already halfway through episode one. We started like 3 days ago.
Today's Thursday? Yeah. And we started 3-4 days ago. Yeah. We've seen 10
We're not
episodes.
Playing. Plus, it's a good time right now because a lot of stuff is ending. And there's that lull between now and when the summer shows start up. So it's a good time. I said to Drew that it's a good time to try and get something that we can binge
watch.
In fact,
it's all dominoes from y'all's fault. We got Netflix because we
That's
wanted to watch
right.
Daredevil.
All of this is the black guy who tips fault. This is true.
And we... Watch Daredevil quick. You know, it's only, I think, 10 episodes. We saw it in a couple of days, like over the course of a weekend, maybe 4 days. And now that we've seen the same, like, 10 episodes of Arrow, they summated more in Daredevil because they had a shorter window. But I kind of like Arrow better than Daredevil. I don't know. We'll see.
It's different. This is a different show.
Yeah, they're completely different shows. Roger, now, I'm not even going to lie. I haven't watched... Daredevil yet. Roderick, like, I woke up in the middle of the night going, did you go to bed? Because, like, I think it, like, released, like, at midnight.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was long gone. I was... So, I woke up going, hey, buddy, what's going on? He was like, I couldn't sleep. And he was watching. I was like, well, I guess you're watching this without me. I'm going back to bed.
Too funny. Yeah, we trucked through them. I thought it was really well done. I thought it set a lot of cool, good things up. And I thought it was the quality of the show is what impressed me the most. It was the first Netflix show I had watched.
Of which one? Daredevil?
Yeah. The production quality of it, you know, the quality of the sets, the special effects, you know, all of the
put
the
some
things.
Money into it.
You know, it's not some piddly little, you know, whatever.
And I applaud Netflix. But I think that... The thing about Netflix is that the studios initially, I think somebody, one of them owned Netflix and was just like, we don't want Netflix. Netflix branched out on their own, and now they're their biggest competition.
Yep. Sure.
I think that everybody is getting scared because now it's forcing them to get apps. It's forcing them to step their game up. It's forcing them that, you know, shows that they drop now, Netflix is going to start picking a lot of these shows up. Netflix and Amazon and Hulu are going to start picking a lot of these shows up that the networks are dropping.
Yep. And bringing all their, you know, diehard fans with them, which for something like Netflix is, that's critical. It would make a diehard fan buy your product. If you love Constantine is a great example of a show that just got canceled that looks like it may be picked up by Hulu or Netflix or somebody. And it's like, you know, there's people that love that show and they may not have Netflix right now, but you saving the show that they love and now they're going to get to see the story continue. That builds huge loyalty. And I think the networks don't, they don't ever get that because it's like, yeah, they put a show on, they put a show on. It's not about, you know, they don't have a lot of loyalty. They're about the ratings and they rarely just stick by a show because the quality is really good.
No, they just canceled American Idol, right?
Well, American Idol doesn't.
I'm just saying the numbers, it still gets 8-9 million viewers. It would be the number like 2 or 3 show on almost any night and it's getting canceled anyway.
Well, it's an expensive show though.
Same thing.
Yeah. So that's the other thing that goes through, definitely. We always end our show by podcast standing. So, of course, this week we are going to stand for the Black Guy Who Tips, our inspiration, the reason why the John even exists, and to Rod and Karen, and especially Karen for coming on the show.
Full circle. Full circle.
It's just been awesome to have you on and to just talk to you and listen to all of your thoughts and everything. It's just been wonderful. So you can find the Black Guy Who Tips on iTunes or Stitcher or Podomatic, and you can also go to their website, theblackguywhotips.com. I strongly cannot say
strenuously
this enough, strenuously insist that you go premium as soon as you listen to one episode, because that's what happened to me. I was hooked immediately and I didn't want there to be any content that they put out that I do not have access to. So get on it, because Karen does Finger Licking Good, which is a sort of cooking show, but they talk about lots of other stuff on that too. Balls Deep Sports, which is the sort of, again, sports show that talks about lots of other things also, which is fantastic. You guys do off-season TV show reviews. You do spoiler movie reviews where you review movies that have already come out. I did have a question about that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I see Rod, it seems like he's tweeting at the movie. Does he actually do that?
Yes. Well, we at the theaters, yes.
Doesn't that piss people off?
Don't people notice?
No, you turn your screen down, you know, because the screens are bright, you know.
Right.
You can actually turn the brightness low.
Oh.
And a lot of times he goes during the day, you know, when there's not a lot of people in there.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. So it's just not that many people.
Pop and grandma. You making me think, you said Finger Licking Good. The name of the show is actually Lip Smacking Good.
Oh,
you said,
Lip Smacking Good. Sorry,
yeah, you said Finger
bad.
Licking Good. I was like, ooh, I do a lot of that now.
Oh, yeah, Lip Smacking Good. Right, sorry, my bad.
No, that's okay. I think, ooh, that should be.
You're talking about daytime movies and spoiling and old people. We were at a theater at our local theater, and they got these reclining seats and really comfortable. So we watched this movie, and it was pretty early in the day. I don't know why it was early in the day. And it was, what was it about
now
magic?
Now you see me,
now you don't.
I don't know if you saw
that
movie with Mark Ruffalo, and it's like a magician's.
I won't spoil it again for anyone that hasn't seen it, but there is like a twist of some sort. And at the end of the movie, like, I'm waiting for the credits to see if there's like even a further like additional Easter egg kind of thing. Nope, house lights come on. House lights come on, I step up, walk out, and there's these two people, you know, elderly people sitting by the door. And I look one of them, I go, oh, man, can you believe, like, bleh? Like, basically, like, the Sixth Sense. Like,
the
you believe Bruce Willis is dead? Like, I mean, I really, like huge, like, drop the bomb. She, without missing a beat, goes, we haven't seen the movie yet. I was like, wow.
That old lady was so pissed, Karen. She was like, really? Y'all, you just ruined it.
How was she doing in the theater? Like,
I told you, old people go to the movies early, especially in the summer, because it's It's cool in there, and they don't like to be out in the heat.
I learned my lesson. You said it right away. What on the earth were you doing talking to people?
That's
anyway?
Some white just people shit. Talking to random people. I tell you that all the time. That's some white people shit. Because don't nobody need to hear you.
I ruined the fuck out of that movie for them. Sorry, ladies.
Oh, you're good, and I do that too. And they have an app called Run Pee,
right?
Which actually tells you when you go pee. What's happening, and it tells you if there's anything extra at the end of the movie.
So you know ahead of time.
The Easter egg on the trailer deal.
Which I've heard a lot of people, like my friend Chatty has kids, but kids that, you know, are old enough to want to go to the movies, but also kids that can't go to the movies by themselves, and so they have to use that all the time so that he knows, okay, Colin, now we can go pee real quick during Spider-Man. Right. So, you know, I won't be missing like really amazing super duper points. Also, make sure you follow Karen on Twitter. And it's say.dat again. And then you have a live tweet feed as well, don't you, Karen?
Yes. Spawn Movie Pod is where I tweet like live shows. And I really enjoy doing that. I probably don't tweet as many live shows as I should. But for me, I always do Game of Thrones. I always do The Walking Dead. And I do The Strain.
Oh, my God. That Strain's about to come back.
I'm so ready for the second season of that. I really hope that for AMC, that whenever they do the version of The Walking Dead, the LA version, that they come on an hour before.
Back to back.
Right, because I'm really going to hate if they come on, because I think coming on at the same time is a disservice to both shows. This is my opinion.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's not fair.
Right, because you know that most people would turn around and watch that, and you literally are taking ratings away from this other show. Because and to an extent, I think we're in an age now where people go the dog days of summer. My prediction is that within the next 3 to 5 years, shows will be released all year round. I think eventually.
I go almost there now.
We're almost there now.
That specifically, right, come out in the summer, like Strain.
Hannibal comes out in the summer.
Right.
There's a bunch of them.
You don't have competition with the fall and other shows.
TBS does it. There's a bunch of channels.
And you never know what Netflix is going to do. They could just drop a whole season or whatever they want whenever they feel like it. So
whenever they feel
like liking to surprise bitches out in here, Beyonce style sometimes. So
right. And have y'all seen the new trailer of Supergirl on CBS?
Yes, I just saw that today. I don't think Drew's seen it yet. That's going to be good, though.
Yeah, that's going to be good. And I know CBS, the old people channel, CBS trying to get them young folks.
They're trying to. They bought all these.
In between six episodes of NCIS Miami.
Nah, they canceled CSI. Next year is the last season for the original CSI. They canceled the other one. They're definitely trying to make a turn. We'll see what happens with them. But
right, because the thing is, like, that's what viewership is in the superhero shows. And for me, my personal opinion, because they be like, CBS, the most watched show. And I look at my DVR and the owls. I was like, we don't have a motherfucking thing on here from CBS.
Same here.
Who are these people?
Old people.
This channel.
Old white people watching like the Big Bang Theory or whatever. CBS. We don't watch anything on that show.
Go to sleep and just be on all day.
That's exactly right.
This past week, this is more for Rod.
I miss practice. If a coach say I miss practice and y'all hear it, then that's that. I mean, I might have missed one practice this year. But if somebody say he doesn't come to practice, it can be one practice out of all the practices this year. That's enough. If I can't practice, I can't practice, man. I'm hurt. I'm hurt. I mean, simple as that. It ain't about that.
James, man, it ain't about that.
It's not about that at all. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but it's easy to talk about. It's easy to sum it up. When you just talk about practice, we sitting here, I supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. Not a game. Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man.
We're talking about practice, man.
So this week was it the 11th anniversary?
I think like 13 years ago.
13 years ago, the AI said that. Do you remember that, Karen, with Allen Iverson? Yes. He a mess.
I didn't realize that had been that many years.
It has been a while.
He's retired and everything.
Yeah, there was some more news this week from Allen. Allen Iverson denies a claim made by former teammate that he occasionally spent $40,000 at a strip club when he was a 76er. Quote, first of all, it was like $9,000 at most. And there were never any strippers at the TGI Fridays on City Line, says Iverson.
I did spend some money, but not that much money.
Then he says, unless I brought them. Sometimes I brought a bunch, and I suppose in those cases, yes, the bill could get up to $40,000 because they didn't have the endless appetizer thing back then, end quote.
He's a fucking brilliant. I love
it. He is the answer, y'all. He's the answer. Again, if you're looking to find us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Interracial John or go to our website, interracialjohn.com. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, M-A-C, and my partner here at Very White Guy. And a hearty thank you again to the lovely Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, and just, we love you.
Love you guys too. Thank you for all your love and all your support, and I've been looking forward to this all day.
Oh, thank you, sweetie.
Thank you. Oh, look at you saying thank you, sweetie, to Karen. I love it.
I gotta get her, like, one of these days to get some voiceover recording for it. I'm gonna have a thank you, sweetie, on my jingle palette.
Your jingle palette? Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Good night, everybody.
High five.